Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Regular listeners will know a frequent theme of our program is control of our own destiny. Numerous past guests have encouraged you to become CEO of you, and it's perfectly okay to seek advice and guidance from loved ones, dear friends, and mentors. But the final life-altering decisions are up to you. After all, who is better qualified to define your life's purpose, establish solid personal goals, and initiate actions to accomplish those goals while you serve others? And today, let's pose the question in nautical terms. Who is the captain of your ship of life? Are you at the helm navigating life's waters with full confidence, and then ultimately confidence that you'll have an ultimately favorable outcome? Of equal importance, are you enjoying each and every day along the way? And it's truly amazing how many highly talented individuals, both men and women, but perhaps more women than men, turn over control of significant portions of their destiny to someone else. And my guest today is an extremely attractive and talented lady who those of us grew up or were young adults in the 70s or 80s will surely recognize. And as you will learn today, despite worldwide acclaim, millions of fans in pop music and on television, she fought a lonely struggle against the controlling and often bizarre behavior of her emotionally inaccessible husband. In effect, she turned over a significant portion of her destiny for 39 years to a captain. In this instance, the captain. My guest today is Toni Tennille. She's one half of the chart-topping pop duo of the 70s and 80s, Captain and Tennille, and she burst into the pop music scene with her husband, Daryl Dragon. There's a good music trivia question. Who is Daryl Dragon? Known, of course, as the captain. They had several top five pop hits, including the 1975 Grammy Award Record of the Year, Love Will Keep Us Together. She co-starred with her husband in the highly popular 70s network TV variety show Captain and Tennille, and she also had her own daytime interview program, The Toni Tennille Show. She's a classically trained pianist and a prolific songwriter, and since 1980s, she's released numerous solo albums, celebrating the romantic music of big band and American standards, and she starred in a national tour of the musical Victoria in the 90s. And I'm sure you've heard of her. And in 2014, she divorced her husband, Daryl Dragon, after 39 years of marriage and moved to Florida with her award-winning Australian Shepherd Dogs. And just this month, she's released her fascinating tell-it-all book, Toni Tennille, a memoir, which she co-authored with her talented niece, Carolyn Tennille St. Clair. And hello, Toni Tennille, and it's indeed a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us today.
Well, thank you, Roy. I'm so happy to be on your show. Where are you located? Are you in Iowa?
Yeah, we're out of Clive, Iowa, a suburb of Des Moines, but
yeah.
We don't want anyone.
Okay. I kind of like to picture where people are when I'm talking to them. I'm in Central Florida, which is just a little northeast of Orlando right now.
Yeah. Well, I urge fans of Captain and Tennille Pop Music and Network TV to preview and purchase Toni's memoir because it contains tons of fascinating material about her childhood up until today. But as an inspiration to frustrated women and men in long-established marriages, today I want to concentrate on her relationship with her husband, Daryl Dragon. And I understand from your book that Daryl was not the passionate sweep-your-off-feet kind of a guy who sends you roses and candy after the first date. How, in fact, did you first meet Daryl Dragon, and what attracted you to him?
Well, I had written a musical called Mother Earth when I was with South Coast Repertory Theater in Southern California. I wrote the music, and one of the directors there, a friend of mine, Ron Tronson, had written the book for it. And It became rather successful to our shock, and we were performing it up in San Francisco, getting ready to move it down to Los Angeles for a run. And we needed a new keyboard player because the one we had from San Francisco couldn't make the trip. So Daryl Dragon was recommended to me as being really good, and he was between Beach Boy tours at the time. You know, he was a member of their backup band for 6 years at that point. So he heard, before he decided to fly up to audition for me, because I was the music director, he heard a recording I'd made of me singing the songs I wrote for Mother Earth. And he told me later that that's the reason he decided he would come up and audition, because he thought the songs were really good and he thought my singing was really good. So when I walked in for the day he was going to audition for me, he was in the lobby of the Marines Memorial Theater in San Francisco, which is where we were running the show. And the first sight I had of him, he was all dressed in black, and he was, you know, very, very thin, and he just, you know, he was sitting slumped with his arms folded on the bench there, and he was the kind of guy I was always attracted to, you know, the kind of nerdy guys, the geeks. They were always, you know, I was never one for the jocks or anything. It was always the creative, mysterious types.
Yeah, so, he sounds pretty mysterious.
Yeah. Yeah, he is, but you know, I kind of have to say that Daryl is not—he's not really responsible for the way he turned out. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain because he didn't have the same kind of upbringing I did.
Yeah.
I was raised in a very loving family. My father, although he was an alcoholic. You know, he had binge problems every now and then, but there was no question that both of our parents adored all four of us Tennille sisters, and particularly my dad. He just thought we hung the moon, all of us. So we always knew we were raised in love, and my mother was a television, had her own talk show, one of the first ever in the country in Montgomery, and Daddy was a big band singer and all that. So I was raised with a creative family. Daryl's family, his father was the very famous Carmen Dragon, who was an Academy Award-winning film scorer and symphony conductor.
Wow.
And he was the maestro who conducted all over the world. And but the family was very opposite, completely opposite from my family.
Yeah,
they
I
were
don't
all
think
very
I'd want
different.
My father to be a maestro. I could see him.
Well, you
know, the
wouldn't.
Way they are in directing the orchestra, they might direct the family that way.
Well, see, now look what you just said. That's absolutely true. That there were five Dragon kids, three boys, and then two girls.
Yeah.
And Daryl was, in my opinion, the most talented of all of the three boys by far.
Yeah.
But when it's interesting that when we began to have our success and the Captain and Tennille name was out there, his father would always make sure that he joked to anyone in earshot that he was the admiral and Daryl was the captain. So we all kind of laughed, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I know what you mean by that, you know, Mr. Dragon, I know what you mean by that. So Daryl had a rough, he didn't have that kind of love and affection.
Well, in the early years, how did your relationship develop? Did you connect first romantically or professionally? And did he frequently did he frequently tell you how much he loved you, or did you go out on romantic dates and talk about the possibility of getting married?
No. None of that. The first date we had was a health food restaurant, and I had to pay my own dinner. He never, ever in the entire years that we were together, were married, never said the words, I love you, ever. He would say, the most he would say is, you're my favorite, and that was rare.
That's nice. You're my wife, but you may not be the only one I'm interested in, but you're my favorite.
You're my favorite, right. But it's not his fault, Roy, because I projected onto him what my romantic self wanted to see.
Yeah.
And when I realized that he was kind of closed, that he was like a closed door, I was convinced that I could teach him what love was, because I'd always had it, and I couldn't imagine not being able to have it. And so I thought I could teach him, and so I spent the first half of our relationship trying to do that, and then I started realizing it isn't going to work finally, and then it was just kind of hold on, because, you know, I didn't want to disappoint the fans, and I was stubborn, and that's
That's interesting. You had pressure. You know, a lot of women want to stay together for the kids, or they have various reasons, but in your case, you also had a professional reason of staying together, because there was that image of, I can remember myself back then thinking, what a loving couple the Captain and Tennille are. They, you know, you always seem so happy in your relationship and sang these positive songs and stuff, so you had that reputation to maintain.
Well, all the songs that I wrote, Roy, for him, The Way I Want to Touch You, Do That to Me One More Time, and many other songs that weren't hits but I still think are some of the finest I've done, that were just, you know, album cuts, were written about him. But the funny thing was that years later, he finally said to me, and I always took time to write the lyrics. I was very careful with my lyrics. They meant a lot to me. And I found out many years later, he said, I never pay attention to the words. I only care about the music. And I went, well, okay. but my words did connect for other people who had a more normal relationship. You know, they understood what I was talking about.
That's funny. You put so much into it, and then your husband says, I didn't hear the words. But
Well, he wasn't a word man. He wasn't a word man.
In your memoir, you reveal that your husband, the captain, had expressed some bizarre ideals and behaved somewhat erratically and was controlling. But I like the example of the grapefruit diet incident that while you were performing at Roy Rogers Apple Valley Inn in Southern California. Tell us a little about the grapefruit diet.
All right. Well, Daryl has always been a health food nut. I mean, truly, I don't want to say health food nut, because a lot of people, and I watch very carefully what I eat, but I still have dessert once in a while. But Daryl was very extreme in his eating habits when I met him. And he's always going on odd diets and things. And then, well, we were booked into the Apple Valley Inn in California for 3 weeks, which was great for us, because we didn't have a hit then. We were just working in clubs. Nobody knew who we were. We were just a club band. And we needed the money. And the money was pretty good. And they would give us our, you know, our room for free. And presumably we could have had food, which Daryl decided we weren't going to do.
What he said would like to me that, was, the opportunity to dine in a place like that.
Of course. Well, what he did was he said, we are going to go on the 21-day grapefruit diet while we're there. And I said, well, what is that and why is that? And he said, because that will clean all of our bad genes out of our DNA or something. And so any bad genes that we may have will go away, and we'll be happy and healthy for the rest of our lives if we do this. And we could not eat pink grapefruits or red grapefruits, which were the sweeter ones. They had to be the white ones.
Oh, great.
And he was deadly serious. So when we got to the Apple Valley Inn, our hotel room was filled with bags of grapefruits. And the trash was filled with, well, hey, was that, we went out and bought them and brought them back to the hotel room. And when the maids came in, you know, to clean up, all they would find were these grapefruit rinds in the trash cans. And what happened was, because grapefruit, I mean, it's lovely, but grapefruit doesn't have any protein. So your muscles begin to deteriorate if you don't get some protein. And I got, and we were still doing, you know, six nights a week.
Yeah.
We were performing from every six nights a week for hours.
Yeah.
And I began to get weaker and weaker and lost weight. And Daryl, you know, who was already thin anyway, just was cadaverous by that time, But he seemed to really get off on it, kind of. Oh boy, you know, I'm cleaning up my jeans. And as you know, and I won't tell this little secret because I know you read it, so you know how he handled the rest of it. But Daryl did make it all the way through the Great Greek Diet. I had a little bit of cheating going on when I realized that I wasn't going to have enough strength
to
do.
Did you about fall off your horse after a couple weeks?
I was horseback riding because I didn't. My muscles were weak because they weren't getting any protein, and when I got off the horse, I could hardly stand up because I, you know, and I'm a good rider. I've ridden all my life, but
yeah.
I said, you know, I've got to get some protein, so I snuck some things.
Well, you did get married in 1975, but it was not a normal courtship, engagement, and wedding ceremony.
No.
Please tell us
no.
the remarkable story of how your record company announced your marriage before it actually occurred. I think that was...
Well, yeah. You know, at that time, I think that our record company was a little concerned because we weren't married and a lot of people thought we were.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't understand why they were so upset about it. Of course, at that time, so many crazy things were going on in the record business. But anyway, they were concerned about it. So they evidently put out a publicity thing that said that we were married on Valentine's Day because they thought that would be really cute. And we didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And then I started getting... fan mail who said, "Oh, you were married on Valentine's Day. That's so cute." wait a minute. We weren't married on Valentine's Day. We were married on Veterans Day, November the 11th. But anyhow, so basically our record company had kind of married us without us realizing that they had done it.
They're doing a bit of favor for you there.
I guess. I don't know. I don't, yeah.
So did you then go on an extensive honeymoon, or was it just like one day and then back to work?
Well, it was just one day and then back to work. I mean, we actually decided to go ahead and make it legal because our financial person said, you know, you would save a lot of taxes if you got married. And so we said okay, and so that's how we got married. It was kind of like
a romantic story. We got married to save taxes.
Well, yeah, that was it. According to Daryl, we could save money. Let's do this. So
at that point in 1975, you were now legally married. In your memoir, you reveal that your pledge of love and devotion to Daryl was achingly real, but you had doubt that it was on his end of the bargain. In fact, did Daryl become more loving and compassionate after in the weeks and months right after the wedding? Did things improve?
Who, Daryl? Did he become more loving and compassionate?
Yeah,
no.
After the marriage.
No.
Of course, he hadn't been very romantic before either. So.
No, he never was. He just, you know what I finally realized? I don't want to make fun of him because he's a troubled man in his own way. You know,
he's a genius, and obviously, in terms of his talent.
He's a genius. Uh-huh. And a lot of geniuses, as you probably know, have difficult psychological makeups.
Yeah.
In some of their cases, you know, their genius comes from their difficulties with their psychology.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just regular, so I don't know. So I cannot blame him really for just being himself. If anybody's at fault in this, it's me for trying to think I could make him something he wasn't.
Yeah, I can understand why you remained with Daryl during the Captain and Tennille glory days, but why did you stay with him after you struck out on your own as a solo performer in the 80s and 90s? You didn't have children, so what kept you together then when you were so successful and talented on your own without the Captain image?
Because when I'm an old, kind of old-fashioned kind of a person,
yeah.
And when I took those wedding vows, even though, you know, Daryl probably thought they were just a financial deal, to me, I said I would be, you know, his wife forever.
Yeah.
And that was the deal I made, you know, that was the vow I made. And then when I began to realize how it just wasn't going to work, it would work for Daryl, because as long as somebody did what he needed done, he was fine.
Yeah.
But it wasn't working for me. And having to make that decision and mostly disappoint our fans was really hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, you said people didn't want to disappoint their kids or when they got a divorce. Well, for me, I guess the fans were the kids. And
that's kind of
the way we're thinking about it.
Well, after that 39 years of feeling, as you could put it in your memoirs, isolated, dominated emotionally and under Daryl's thumb, what happened a couple of years back that gave you the courage to end the marriage? Was there a certain straw that broke the camel's back, or what gave you the courage after so many years to face the future as a single? What changed your mind on that?
Well, Roy, you know, it was really a straw that broke the camel's back. It was building, 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 and I kept accepting, accepting, accepting.
Yeah.
And it was finally one incident, and it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
I do talk about it in the book, as you know, and it's just too hard to go into, but I will tell you, it involved a $10,000 generator, which Daryl insisted that we needed because the government was going to come and take our electricity away. And he would listen to conspiracy radio all the time, and that was the kind of thing he would do. And so he had heard that this was going to happen, and at that time, we had lost a great deal of money on the house we had to sell, and we bought at the top of the market and had to sell, when the market was very low, and I was really, really worried about money and very concerned, and knew we didn't have to have a generator. We'd have one at that other house that would have run the city of Prescott easily all by itself. So, you know, if you wanted to have a little Honda generator, that would have been fine. But no, we had to have this $10,000 generator. And he went ahead and bought it. And that was when I went, I can't, this is not going to happen. I've got to get out of here. But, leading to that.
He told you to get out of the room or he wouldn't listen to use some words we can't use on the radio.
Yeah, we use the words we can't use. And it was terribly sad because I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
And I felt bad for me, but I had to escape to protect myself from going down that hole.
Yeah.
I just
well, now as a single person, now living on your own in Florida, do you find yourself happy and fulfilled? And would you advise a female friend frustrated in her marriage that, tried but couldn't make progress to do the same thing?
Making up my mind, it took a long, long, long time. I wouldn't advise anybody to go as long as I did.
No.
But when I did make the decision, it was because of the help of my loving family, my dear friends. I have friends back in Prescott I miss if they were here. And I have friends in Arizona, in Nevada that I loved. And I have friends everywhere that helped me make this decision. And I also reached out to a therapist, a fine one in Prescott, who helped me work through this.
And also you have four loving sisters who you talk about a lot in your book. They sound like real supportive individuals as well.
They are, and all of my sisters are exemplary, accomplished women, and I'm very proud of all of them.
And you, interestingly enough, you say that the captain is doing pretty well as a single person as well, you point out.
He is. You know, I talk to him about every week or 10 days. Either I call him or he calls me. But I check. I want to make sure he's doing okay.
Yeah.
As long as he has someone to do, for him, cook his food and all that stuff, he seems to be just fine. And we still own our business together, Moonlight Magnolias, which is our publishing company. We still co-own.
Yeah.
So we have that business together. But he's totally fine, without me. And so that's good because I'm a lot better without him.
Your memoir is both informative and inspirational. Where can we go to preview and purchase? It's just called Memoir, Tony Tenniel Memoir.
Tony Tenniel, a memoir, and it's actually out in stores on April 1st. The audio book, which I recorded about 4 weeks ago, is out at the same time.
Oh, that's great.
You can go to your local stores and buy them, your local bookstores, Barnes & Noble. You can also go on Amazon. It's been available for pre-order for several months, and I guess they've sold quite a few by pre-order. But go to Amazon.com and go to their book department and put in Tony Camilla Memoir, and you will find how you can purchase it that way. Yeah. And that is a reasonable price right now, I'll tell you, for the book. And you can also either get the Audible version, you can download it, or you can get it on CD. I think they're making it available on CD as well.
Yeah, I noticed on Amazon you also have a lot of your CDs still available, both as a duo and as a solo performer. I love those big band songs and
some of that stuff you did
as a single. But,
So do I.
So do you have a website we can go to find out more?
Well, there's a couple of places, and I'll tell you where to go.
Okay.
I have a website called TonyTennille.net.
Oh,
I blog on that occasionally, but if you want to know where I'm going to be, where I'm going to be signing books, what television shows I'm going to be on, we're headed to New York, Caroline and I are, the middle of April, and then to L.A. to do some TV and that sort of thing. Go to The Real Tony Tennille on Facebook.
I like that.
Because there's already a Tony Tennille that isn't me, so I had to use The Real Tony Tennille. So go to Facebook.com and just put The Real Tony Tennille. It'll take you right to it. And every time we have something that we know specifically we're going that's coming up, Caroline and I post it on that page. And also, if people write to me on that page or comment or ask me questions, I'm usually catching up on it every day. I'll go and answer.
That's a nice, catchy phrase anyway, The Real Tony Tennille. I like
that. Well, yeah, it kind of rhymes, doesn't it?
Well, in conclusion, Tony Tennille is truly an inspiration for those of us at middle age. And I'm not suggesting that all of you frustrated wives go out right now and divorce your hubbies, but I am suggesting that all of us must concentrate on satisfying our own emotional needs and desires first. And you really need to do that before you can give yourself and giving it. You can't give everything to someone else while you remain miserable, as I'm sure Tony has learned over the years. But your husband won't cater to you until he knows what your emotional needs are, so be sure to let him know. And maybe, like Daryl, he doesn't pay much attention when he does know, but some of us husbands might react a little bit better. And fellow husbands, beware. You're no longer how long you've been married. Your wife is not your possession, and you better find out what she really wants out of her life and what she wants from you, rather than just expecting her to serve your needs the rest of your life.
I like the way you think, Roy.
Even after 39 years, you may be in for a surprise. But for those of you happily married and mutually in love, buy Tony Tennille's book anyway, because it tells a fascinating story of her life from childhood in Alabama all the way through her career and through that recent divorce she went through, and you can find out all about that. And it's really fascinating also to learn about the music industry and the TV industry in the 70s and 80s and back when she was. And thank you so much, Tony Tennille, and best success with your book and your raising those Australian shepherds.
Australian shepherds, absolutely. I've got one of them with her head in my lap right now.
Oh, I wish I could pet her. I love dogs.
they're wonderful girls. They really are.
Tell her I said hi and best of success, like I said, and thank you so much for joining us today on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, Roy.
Well, after listening to Tony Tennille's story, here's a warning for my fellow husbands. Now, I'm not implying that any of you domineer or mistreat your wife like Daryl Dragon did. But if you've been married for some time, after all, Tony was married for 39 years, maybe you've been married for 20, 30, even 40 years, do you take your wife for granted? Is she clearly second place behind your personal needs, desires, and aspirations? Do you always set the rules and try to dominate what happens in your marriage? Do you come home on weeknights after a day at the job and plop yourself in front of TV or the computer while your wife works, cooks your meal, and slaves over housework? Do you even ask her about how her day went at home or at the office? On weekends, would you rather be playing golf with your buddies or out on the, your boat fishing or maybe watching football on TV instead of taking your wife out to dinner and a movie or completing her pet projects around the house? Do you even ask her what she wants done and what she would like you to be doing on the weekends? Well, if this describes you, here's your warning. Roughly 3/4 of all divorce actions in the United States are initiated by women. Do you not wonder why? Numerous studies demonstrate that married men tend to live longer, earn more money, and have lower rates of clinical depression, alcoholism, and substance abuse than their single counterparts. These same trends do not hold true for married women. You know, in the olden days, wives were considered the primary beneficiaries of a good marriage. Today, one might argue that we husbands are the primary beneficiary. If you've been married to the same woman for more than a few years, could it be that you're asking more of your wife than you are willing to give in return? Has your relationship settled into an all-too-predictable, dull daily routine? Are you taking the one-time love of your life for granted? The days are long past when a woman defined success in life principally by how well she married. Although certain loving women still choose child-rearing and homemaking as a primary vocation, more and more wives today are pursuing their own careers outside the home and often with the same intensity as their husbands, as we husbands. As 21st century husbands and fathers, are you and I willing to make the same personal sacrifices that we expect from our wives? Ask yourself, how do you define a loving partnership within your marriage? When you married several years ago, you pledged to love, honor, and obey your wife through good times and bad times. Are you demanding too much of her today? If your wife has a full-time job, are you willing to share 50-50 in routine domestic chores? Do you cook, shop for groceries, clean house, and do laundry? Do you assume an active role in nurturing young children or guiding adolescents? Challenge yourself with the following questions concerning the state of your marriage today. Do I bring as much loving support to my wife as I receive from her? In all honesty, would my wife's daily experience be more or less fulfilling were I not around? There's a tough one. Am I truly supportive of my wife's vocation? Am I willing to sacrifice a portion of my personal ambition to advance her career? Am I sincere in helping to relieve my wife's daily stress? Do I routinely pitch in to help with household and child-rearing tasks without first being asked? In order to accomplish a renewed happily ever after marriage, you'll need to elevate your wife this very day to full and equal partner in the joint venture through life. Attempt to assume your wife's viewpoint. Would you be content in your marriage today if your two roles were reversed? Imagine an ideal soulmate for your wife, given her personality, ambitions, and life goals. Do you even know what your wife's life goals are? Now talk to your wife and find out. What more does she desire out of your marriage? Does she consider it a full and equal partnership? Does she feel like she's being treated as a loving life partner? Here's an idea for next weekend. Heck, for any day of the year. Try to make your wife the sole center of your attention next weekend with no particular agenda of your own. Above all else, commit to today's reality that your wife's contentment, aspiration, and enjoyment of life are just as important, every bit as much as yours. You know, I wrote in detail about restoring spousal and family relationships and sharing and building on your marriage in my comprehensive book on midlife renewal for men and women, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up by Roy C. Richards, and I invite you to contact me with your own observations on a successful marriage and to learn more, access our blogs or send me a message or to preview my book, please visit our recently redesigned website, middleagerenewal.com. You can also find my book on Amazon or barnesandnoble.com. And that's our program for today. Join us next week when our guest will talk about rescuing those resolutions you keep failing to keep. Notice, don't we all? And that's it for today on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.